You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the next big Supreme Court case, which could gut even more voting rights. Evanwell versus Abbott. Also on the program today, Bernie's in. Bernie Sanders makes his, I guess, I don't know, is this his official announcement or the other official announcement, but at least the big rally announcement in Vermont. Good time to look at how he is disparaged by the corporate media. It's really fascinating. I have a firsthand account of this, and I think I mentioned it sometime last week, but I will reiterate it to you. Meanwhile, we'll get to that Koch brothers story. It will be important. Sheldon Adelson on the witness stand. That could also be important in terms of the 2016 elections. Rubio gives warning to Christians. And Graham understands the Iranians. Why? Because he hung around a pool hall. Bingo. Yes. Doesn't make any sense to you, nor does it to anyone else. The Patriot Act reauthorization teetering on the brink of not happening. Meanwhile, Rand Paul doesn't know about Benghazi, but does seem to know about ISIS. Credit where credit is due. The problem, following the little mini debate we had with a libertarian who called in yesterday, the one problem with the minimum wage rise in L.A., and from last week, Ireland, the first country in the world to legalize marriage equality via referendum. All that and more on today's program. I want to get to the story about the inability, it seems, for Congress, and by that I mean the Senate and the House, to reauthorize the Patriot Act. They have to do it by Sunday night, June 1st. I am not lamenting the fact that it may not be authorized, although I find that hard to believe. Essentially, what has happened is the House passed the USA Freedom Act. Is that what they called it? Which is a variant on the Patriot Act. I just want to remind you folks that we're all adults here. And you may not know it when you hear the way that we name our bills. But it's really, really sad. And I think there's definitely an inverse proportion between some type of inverse relationship between the name of the bill and just how sort of it does and what it does or what it represents in reality. Nothing patriotic about the Patriot Act. Nothing free about the Freedom Act. That said, the Freedom Act, is a variant on the Patriot Act. The biggest change, at least in terms of a reform measure, is that it no longer allows the government to maintain stores of bulk collection of our phone records. It calls for these to be held by the phone companies and then accessible to the government. The Freedom Act, the USA Freedom Act, passed the House. However, in a turn, it cannot seem to pass the Senate, as Republican senators primarily do not want to weaken the government's ability to surveil on you in any shape or form. Now, there's been a couple holdouts. Rand Paul, of course, one of the more prominent ones. There's five others, I think it is. And so they could not get cloture. The Senate is being called back to Washington on Sunday to work out some type of compromise, presumably, I guess, to vote to see if they can get a cloture and vote on the USA Freedom Act. Otherwise, there's no reauthorization. So that's a good, I mean, at the very least, we're seeing some measure of reform. It looks like it's going to happen. And I should tell you that Credo Action is one of those entities that have been fighting hard to sunset the Patriot Act. They have a petition now with, I think, almost 55,000 people who have signed. And Credo Action, of course, is the political action division, if you will, of Credo Mobile. Credo Mobile is sponsoring this podcast this month. They're giving Majority Report listeners $100 off any phone plus 25% off their data plan fees for 1 year. CredoMobile.com/Majority Report to get that deal. If you want to call in, call 800-966-1665. Use the offer code 501882. Not only you get $100 off any phone and 25% off your data for a year, they'll also give you credit on their Credo bill to cover the cost of any early termination fee that you get from your other carrier for up to $350 per line. You can also be eligible for up to $300 in trade-in for your current phone. So join America's only progressive phone company. And it's an entity that, frankly, you know, this is, I think, the third year out of four, I think, that Credo has sponsored this program. And they both do it to sponsor this program, obviously, and to get new subscribers to their phone service. But it is, we don't take a lot of sponsorships. We don't get offered that many to begin with. But there are, I'd say we reject about 30%, 40% that come through from our media broker. I mean, a lot of that stuff is sort of silly stuff. But this is a company, this is one of the few that I actually seek out because I like Credo Mobile. Tomorrow on the program, Becky Bond will be with us, and we'll also play an interview from Congressman Mark Pocan about TPP. So we will get to that tomorrow. But let's turn to some good news for people who are advocating against things like the Patriot Act, at least the most invasive provisions, for people who are advocating against the TPP, for people who are advocating against income equality. Inequality, I should say. Yesterday, Bernie Sanders addressed what looked like somewhere between 5 and 10,000 people in Burlington, Vermont. And that's a lot of people for Vermont. I think I told you guys that I was up in Montpelier, Vermont, years ago, which is the capital. Only 5,000, maybe I guess there's 8,000 people who live there now. Burlington's a bigger city, but even still, that's a lot of people to come out. Bernie Sanders, of course, former mayor of Burlington, Vermont. Let's listen to a couple of minutes of his speech. There was a lot of people there. It was quite a speech.
And to those who say we cannot restore the dream, I say just look where we are standing today. As some of you will remember, this beautiful place was once an unsightly rail yard that served no public purpose and was an eyesore. As mayor, I worked with the people of Burlington to help turn this waterfront into the beautiful, people-oriented public space it is today. We took that fight to the courts, to the legislature, and to the people, and we won. The lesson to be learned, and it is a profound political lesson, is that when people stand together, when people are prepared to fight back, there is nothing that cannot be accomplished. We can live in a country where every person has health care is a right, not a privilege. We can live in a country where every parent can have quality and affordable child care and where all of our qualified young people can get a college education regardless of their income. We can live in a country where every senior can live in dignity and security and not be forced to choose between food and medicine. We can live in a country where every veteran who has put his or her life on the line to defend this nation gets the quality health care and benefits they have earned and deserve. We can live in a country where every person, no matter their race, their religion, their disability, or their sexual orientation, realizes the full promise of equality that is our birthright as Americans.
So there you have it. Harkening back a little bit to Yes, We Can. On some level, I don't know how conscious that is, but I imagine those things don't happen by coincidence. Now, just to put into context where Bernie Sanders is, because, you know, we see basically two types of reporting on this, really three types. One is they take him at face value. This is a guy who has 14% support in Iowa, I think also in New Hampshire. He's going up against somebody who has over 50% in those states. He is someone who is aspiring to raise $50 million and going up against someone who's going to raise $1 billion. But with that said, Bernie Sanders' campaign has more support than Lindsey Graham, Bobby Jindal, Carly Fiorina, John Kasich combined, and probably you could throw in another half dozen Republicans combined. He has raised more money in his first 3 or 4 days through small donations than at least half to three quarters of those people in the Republican Party race. He's also doing significantly better than Martin O'Malley or Lincoln Chafee or Jim Webb, the only other so far, I guess, identified potential adversaries to Hillary Clinton. But look at the way that some people report on this. It's fascinating. And I was interviewed, I think I mentioned this the other day, I was interviewed by a Politico reporter who was like, who I said, you know, who's writing a piece on O'Malley. And the angle was, why aren't people paying more attention to Martin O'Malley as opposed to Elizabeth Warren? And I said, well, I don't understand. Elizabeth Warren's not running. Shouldn't the question be, why are they paying more attention to Bernie Sanders? And he's like, well, Bernie Sanders can't win. Well, that may be true, but Elizabeth Warren, she can't win either because she's not running. And you're doing a story on Martin O'Malley, and if Bernie Sanders can't win, newsflash, Martin O'Malley can't win. That's just reality. It is possible, I guess, that Martin O'Malley would have has an infinitesimally small better chance than Bernie Sanders, because if something happened to Hillary Clinton or she decided to drop out of the race, that Martin O'Malley might be their second choice. And by there, I mean the establishment or all these voters who have no idea who he is. But it's more likely that Joe Biden would jump in, or more likely that some other establishment person would jump in. So you can't say it's ridiculous to contemplate Bernie Sanders as winning the Democratic primary and not say the same thing about anyone else. But this is how disregarded the idea of what Bernie Sanders advocates is in the establishment and in the Beltway media. And the irony of that is none of his positions are controversial to the American public. The idea of expanding Social Security, overwhelming support. The idea of universal health care, overwhelming support. Child care, overwhelming support. Debt-free college. I haven't seen the polling on that, but I imagine it's a pretty mainstream idea. Michael will look that up for me right now. And to think, all right, so let me read this story from you for Politico. This is a different reporter, Jonathan Topaz. It's not your everyday Americans at Bernie Sanders kickoff rally. That's the headline. It's not your everyday Americans at Bernie Sanders kickoff rally. The long shot presidential contender launches campaign from the People's Republic of Burlington. I mean, this is ridiculous. I want to compare this to something that Duncan Black at Atrios pulled the other day. I'm going to compare that headline with Fiorina talks in Iowa swoons, but will it last? Republicans in Iowa are starting to swoon over Carly Fiorina, a former Silicon Valley executive who is mostly unknown in much of the country. Seven paragraphs later, in paragraph 8, while supporters in Iowa noted that she had doubled her standing in state polls, it was a statistically insignificant change from 1 to 2%. Santorum also at 2%. 5% supported Mr. Bush. So they're swooning in Iowa. And by Iowa, we mean 1 to 2%. Maybe that's not even a proper measure because it's so small, it's almost statistically insignificant. It's probably within the margin of error. She could be 0% of Iowa could be swooning over her. When Carly Fiorina gives her speeches, in fact, every speech that she has given, not every, 90% of Chris Christie's speeches, Bush's speeches, Clinton's speeches, are they in front of everyday Americans? Or are they in front of people who are statistically so far embedded in the margins of income distribution and life experiences in this country that few of any of the people that hear the sound of my voice have even ever met anyone like that? These weren't your everyday Americans who came out to support Bernie Sanders on Tuesday. The self-described Democratic Socialist kicked off. Self-described Democratic Socialist. How many times have you ever read John Kasich is a proud conservative, espousing his proud conservative values, Rick Santorum. Jeb Bush is trying to argue he's a proud conservative. Yeah, he's self-described Democratic Socialist. I wonder if anyone's ever said self-described conservative. Has anybody even read? Because you know what the implication is there. I'm not disparaging him by calling him a Democratic Socialist. He describes himself that way. I don't want to be blamed for calling him a Democratic Socialist. That's how he IDs. I mean, this entire thing is written like a parody. He kicked off his long shot run for the White House in his adopted hometown of Burlington, a lakeside city full of characters who might not have passed the pre-selection process for Hillary Clinton's tour of roundtables. Really? In the afternoon, a people's assembly of hundreds of Sanders supporters gathered in City Hall Park. Dreadlocked guitars played in the morning and patrons browsed near the hemp pest, which averages its size as itself as the largest organic hemp product store in the world.
Do they have that same description for some of the people that come to a Rand Paul type event?
Oh, come on, man.
Because I'll guarantee you could find those same type of people there.
Well, this isn't even the Bernie Sanders event. This is just people who have assembled before the Bernie Sanders event.
I mean, you could really do that for any sort of public space that someone's going to talk to. Just describe who's there now, before the event.
And then he goes on to talk about
a Dorito out of a bag in preparation for Jeb Bush's announcement.
Then he goes on to write, Sanders stuck. This is then jumps to later in the evening when there's thousands listening to Bernie Sanders. Sanders stuck to a familiar populist script. Familiar, but what? In other words, Sanders stuck to a tired... I mean, when was last time? Jeb Bush stuck to a familiar neoliberal script in saying there should be no interference in the so-called free market. No, you just don't hear that. You just don't hear it. Then he went on to, I don't know, bury the other stuff in the piece. Unbelievable. Really unbelievable. And this has not gone unnoticed. Simon Malloy over at Salon has a piece talking about the sort of the shock in which Bernie Sanders calling for Eisenhower-era policies has been met with by the national press. I guess he went on CNBC with John Hardwood. And John Hardwood apparently almost had a heart attack when Bernie Sanders reminded him that during the 1950s, the top marginal rate was around 90%. And if memory serves me correctly, that kicked in somewhere around $400,000 in 1950. So every dollar you made after 400,000, somewhere around there, maybe it was 450, you would get taxed at 90%. $400,000 in today's, in 1950 dollars would be where? With inflation, 400,000 in 1950 would be almost $4 million today. So every dollar you earned over $4 million, 90 cents of it would be taken in taxes. This is the way it worked in the 1950s, folks. And through at least the early 60s. Then I think under Kennedy, some loopholes were closed and it was dropped down to like 70, 75%. By the time we get to Reagan, it's down to like 30%. Hardwood responded, when you think about something like 90%, don't you think that's obviously too high? No, said Bernie. The New York Times wrote, Bernie Sanders doesn't flinch over returning to the 90% personal income tax rates of the 1950s for top earners. I got news for you. 98% of the country doesn't flinch at the idea of people making over $4 million a year having to pay 90% on every dollar over $4 million. 98% of the country, probably 99% of the country, but there's some people, maybe they have a nervous tic. And every time they hear certain words, yeah, whenever I hear the word percentage, I flinch. And Bryce Covert, as Simon Malloy points out, reported on a paper from two economists, Kinderman and Kruger, back in late 2014, that found that to the extent that there is a Laffer curve, remember the Laffer curve? Laffer curve was that idea that is decimating Kansas right now. The Laffer curve, supposedly, there's a spot where people just basically stop working because they're being taxed so much that it's not worth their while. Well, these economists found that the top marginal tax rate that maximizes government revenues before being so high as to discourage the wealthiest from earning more is very high, or 95% of those who are among the top 1% earners. In other words, for those people, and that's actually lower than I think $4 million a year. I think that's closer to like $500,000 a year. You can tax them at 91% on every dollar after that $500,000, and they'll still continue to work and produce. So the idea that Bernie Sanders, and this is the one thing that I think people have to keep an eye out for, is that Bernie Sanders is going to be maligned at every point. Because, look, Bernie Sanders may not win this election. It's not inconceivable that he wouldn't. Highly unlikely. Nevertheless, supporting Bernie Sanders has real value that you could just measure in the reaction of people like John Harwood or these people from Politico or these people from the New York Times. And that real value is that more and more people will hear his message and be like, yeah, why can't we have debt-free college? Why can't we have universal child care? I'm not flinching at the idea that after $4 million, every dollar you earn, You pay 95 cents in taxes. I'm not flinching out of that. That's what they're worried about now with Bernie Sanders. And they can't find an angle, frankly, to stop him yet. There is a lot of concern, I think. Not that Bernie Sanders is going to beat Hillary Clinton, although he could be a serious headache for her. Serious headache. But that this guy's going to get on the same stage with Hillary Clinton. And the country is going to hear a full-throated platform that they actually appreciate, that they could support unreservedly. I think that's the biggest concern that people have when they write about this. Like, they don't want this guy to be taken seriously. And it's getting out. There was a time where this would work, right? Where the political class could define whether or not a guy was viable. I mean, Howard Dean, not nearly as progressive or populist as Bernie Sanders. But they certainly didn't want Howard Dean to be taken seriously. The press is not going to have the same opportunity with Bernie Sanders. Howard Dean, I think they were actually legitimately afraid that he could win. I don't know if they had that legitimate fear about Bernie Sanders, but they certainly are concerned that, like, hey, wait a second, what happens if it becomes clearer and clearer that the idea of universal pre-K, the idea of universal child care, health care, access to free college, debt-free college, the American public seems to think these aren't so crazy or kooky. They don't have dreadlocks. What's going on? It's weird that way. I'm not playing hacky sack, but a lot of these ideas that Bernie Sanders are espousing make sense to me.
The waft of patchouli oil just secretly seeping through America.
Indeed.
Could be next to you.
It's all emanating from Marc Maron. I should also, speaking of waft, frequent I am a Reagan in the money sent me this that... it's a little bit Oregon-centric, but what the heck? In Pendleton, I guess that's in Oregon. I don't know if that's county or city. The city council approved an amendment to the city's nuisance ordinance that prohibits marijuana odor from leaving a person's property. I just figured I'd do him a favor and do that. I wanted to talk about this. I'll talk briefly about this problem, the minimum wage. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I think I touched on it yesterday. And in the fun half. And we're gonna talk to Ari Berman about this voting case, Evan Well versus Abbott. And I want to get to these candidates, too, because the Koch brothers made a rather relevant announcement over the weekend. I'm not saying you should necessarily take it at face value, but they have already pledged to put $1 billion into the race. Now, I know it's $900 million, but I imagine there's going to be money coming from other sources that they are either going to control or get matched or whatnot. And they basically said over the weekend, I think one of them showed up on Larry Kudlow's radio program. Yeah, you know, we contemplated just buying one, but we realized we can buy a couple candidates. And there's no reason not to. Now, it's interesting. You got to contemplate for a moment. You're Sheldon Adelson. You've just gotten off the witness stand for a wrongful termination suit where one of your guys in your subsidiary in China said, hey, you're forcing me to pay a bribe to a Chinese official. I don't want to do that because that's apparently against American law. And
Sheldon Adelson said,
"What? Do it. What? What do I care?
You hate Israel or something?"
Yeah, exactly.
What's the matter? You don't believe the Holocaust took place? You exactly. pay that bribe to the official in Macau, you anti-Semite.
Exactly.
And you tell my friend Mr. Wu that I look forward to having drinks with him and talking about Palestine being an invented state.
There you go.
That's him. Those are his twin poles.
Yeah,
massive
Sheldon Adelson.
Corruption, casinos, and Israel ultranationalism.
I need to raise enough money so I can build my own bomb to bomb. So, but if you're Adelson, right, you got to ask yourself, like, wait a second, do I really want to buy a guy who's already been bought by the Koch brothers, or do I want to buy my own guy? Now, if you're the Koch brothers, you're going to get out there, and he said, one of the David Koch, I guess, said, or I guess Charles Koch in April said that they were looking at Scott Walker, at Jeb Bush, at Ted Cruz, at Rand Paul, at Marco Rubio. But here's the thing. I don't think the Koch brothers are going to give meaningfully to Jeb Bush. I think they're going to give a little bit. But they know they can't own him because Jeb Bush has his own funding. But a guy like Scott Walker, they can own him. Rubio has his own billionaire. So I think they're going to throw some money around, but it's going to be more like, all right, there's 32 spots where the roulette wheel will fund. We will put 100,000 on each slot, but there's a couple we're going to drop a million or two. Now, of course, when they actually do this, you can add a couple of zeros onto all those figures. What we've told them right now, said Charles Koch in April, is we're not supporting anyone. We're telling them if they want our support, one way to get it is articulating a good message to help Americans get a better understanding, a better appreciation of how certain policies will benefit them and all of America. So that's actually getting some real bang for your buck. I'm not going to pay you right now to say what we want you to say, but I'm going to dangle the idea that we might pay you out there to see how well you, how high you jump. David Koch went on the Larry Kudlow show, said, we're thinking of supporting several Republicans. If we're happy with the policies that these individuals are supporting, we'll finance their campaigns. So there it is. I mean, I've been saying for a while that these guys don't look at this just as we want to own the next president. They're also looking at this as we already spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year to promote these policies that benefit the wealthiest amongst us for a fraction of that cost. We can actually hire a spokesperson who has media people following them around for the next 12 months to say these things. And that's what we're going to do. And that's why for Sheldon Adelson, he may not put all his money on the winner, but he'll get what he wants, somebody to go around and talk about how Palestinians are not really human beings, or how unions are made up of people who are just one step above Palestinians in his mind.
They're not invented, but they're terrible. What you do is you go to the
union
hall.
They're not a fiction, but they're still pretty bad. It's pretty hard to understand how bad they are.
It's in the worst. It's in the bargain bin of the nonfiction section. You go to a union hall when no one's working, and there's no one in the hall, but it's a big union hall. You drop a nuke on that hall.
Foster Freeze is still going to want somebody to go around and rail against contraception.
Women.
And women. Right. So Rick Santorum is still going to get
the game for the amount of money he's dropping.
Right.
He's that odd G's billionaire. He's like, you know, it just seems to me for all the money I'm giving you, can't you just say that we ought to have like a kind of Christian Taliban situation with the ladies. I mean, that's just me. I'm the one cutting all the checks. Remember him? He was almost sort of...
Who, is that Foster Freeze?
Even exceptionally creepy because he had this sort of like avuncular air about him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was just like... He reminded me actually of a guy, a dad of a girl I dated in high school.
Whew.
Well, there was like... literally, that was the first time I'd ever heard that line about birth control. It's aspirin. You just make sure you keep it right between your legs.
Now, I had never heard that in my life.
Oh, yeah.
I just heard that as a kid. Randomly happened to see him say that live. I have no idea where I was or why the TV. I feel like and who did he say? I don't remember who was interviewing him, but she actually had like a, what are you talking about?
Right.
And he had this smirk on his
face. Oh, no,
face.
He thought he was being very funny.
Oh, my God.
He thought he was being very funny.
It's definitely the smirk of nobody, of someone who.
Now, I heard that joke 30 years ago, and it was inappropriate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. So Marco Rubio is out there. He is the flavor of the day right now. There's people who still think that Marco Rubio could be on the move. There's a lot of people I know who think that. That Jeb Bush doesn't even make it to South Carolina. And then Marco Rubio would come in. Now, my sense is that people are underestimating just how much. I mean, you know, Marco Rubio, because he's young, he's got new policies. Except for their old policies. New old policies. He's going to appeal to Latinos because he's from Cuba. Well, aside from the fact that there's a difference between Latinos and Cubans, Cubans are a subset of Latinos, but Mexicans don't necessarily perceive themselves as like Cubans. To the extent that Marco Rubio had any traction in the Latino community, it was at one point because he was trying to forge an immigration compromise. But my understanding is that the Latino community feels that he is even worse than those who prevented it from happening because he sold them out. He basically just dried up and shriveled away. But here's Marco Rubio doing his best to lay the groundwork for South Carolina. Because you know what, folks? Christianity is in danger. Here he is on the CBN.
We are at the water's edge of the argument that mainstream Christian teaching is hate speech. Because today we've reached the point in our society where if you do not support same-sex marriage, you are labeled a homophobe and a hater. So what's the next step after that? After they've done going after individuals, the next step is to argue that the teachings of mainstream Christianity, the catechism of the Catholic Church, is hate speech. And that's a real and present danger.
Well, first off, I will make that argument right now. And guess what? Nothing happens. The idea that there's any danger to Catholics believing what they want to believe is a joke. It's a joke. But it's also a clear and present danger.
Not a real and present danger. It's a clear and present danger.
That's right.
He's trying to make another action movie reference. You know, a couple weeks ago, we played the clip of him using the line from Taken to explain his terrorism strategy. And there was a lot of problems with that.
I mean, is this his campaign strategy? Just quote from movies? That's his whole...
All right. Well, look, we got to take a break.
He's
got to
find
back,
a fitting Tupac quote to explain.
We got a quote from Lindsey Graham, I guess, announced his... and Lindsey Graham is... This guy, it's unbelievable, his Iran fetish, that it permeates everything. We'll get to that sound. And credit where credit is due. Rand Paul fires back on Lindsey Graham and his ilk. Also interesting. We'll see. I think Rand is getting a little bit desperate, it seems to me. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. A reminder, this show is being sponsored by Credo Mobile. Go to credomobile.com/majority report. Get that great deal for Majority Report listeners. It's only going to last a couple more weeks, folks. Really, literally only a couple more weeks. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. The show is primarily supported by its members. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Pick up the app. It's free. You can listen to the show live. You can download it. You can stream it. Members can log in. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do is buy it from our link. Go to majorityreportkickback.com. Click on the Amazon box, bookmark it, use that as your Amazon. We get a kickback. Thus, we call it majorityreportkickback.com. Nearly made back the money to buy that URL. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back. Oh, you know what? I wanted to ask people. Send us your nominations for Best Of for the past year. I'm just curious. We're trying to put together a little demo reel. Just 5 minutes. And it's got to be in the free part of the show. I'll mention that tomorrow. Because those people already stopped listening. I know they did. We'll be right back after this.